Well, we live in a society that that values reusing things, recycling, reducing waste. You know, if you go to Pinterest, you will find all kinds of projects that are... Does anybody look at Pinterest? Shame on you, because look at all the women. Oh, except for... Sorry, Kyle. And you make your husbands do those projects, or is that just my life? But anyway, so oftentimes you find things on Pinterest that, you know, they'll take, it's reusing something, repurposing it. You know, and so in our society, it's a big deal that we repurpose instead of send things off to landfills. And so I do my part. I visit Swan Lake and see what kind of wood is down there that I can repurpose or take out of there and use, but it's a big deal in our world. And so, do you know the rest of the statement? Reduce, reuse. Oh my goodness! See, it's been imprinted in us. It is so valuable. I had my grandma was thrifty, and so she recycled. In fact, she would take old bread bags and she'd crochet them into, like, kitchen rugs, I guess. Anybody ever have a kitchen rug made out of bread bags? One? I saw one hand. Okay. So maybe my grandma was a little weird. I thought everybody had a kitchen rug made out of bread bags crocheted. But it was that reusing or repurposing something. And, you know, sometimes we recycle because we're concerned about the environment. You know, we're thinking ahead and we want to protect it. Some of us, we just go along for the flow. You know, we don't live in a community that has separate garbage cans, one for the stuff that they're going to send to the recycling, and one they're going to send to the other place, whatever that is. And then, but they only bring one truck by, so I don't even understand how that all works. But some of us, we just kind of go along with it, recycling. We don't like to waste in our society. I think that's part of the theme that we're being told. Well, you know, what about wasting our lives? I remember the day when midlife crisis was a big deal, and it was something talked about often. You know, old guys hitting the point in their life where they just kind of snap and they get a divorce and they buy a sports car and they start using that whatever that stuff is that takes the gray out of your beard and hair. By the way, I didn't spill milk. Okay, this is gray. I can't stop it. So, and I'm not going to spend my money on that. But I had I was worried about that midlife crisis thing. So I decided, you know, I was going to have one early. So at age 24, I went through what I would call a midlife crisis. And the reason I call it a midlife crisis is because at 24, I was still in college. I had no degree. I was single. I drove a clunker around, and I really didn't have a job. Well, you know, I worked at Kmart, so not a job that I wanted. And so as I began to reflect on my life, I thought, wait a minute, I'm 24. This is not where I thought my life was going to be. I mean, I didn't realize I had this picture in my head of where I thought I was going to be at 24. But I know it involved a degree, I know it involved a good job, and I know it involved a lady. And maybe even some kids there. So I thought I was going to be—I thought I was going to be married. I thought I was going to have a good job, and I thought I was going to be on my way in life. And I stopped and I looked, and I was nowhere. I still was struggling with, what am I even going to do? And I felt like I was wasting my life. I had wasted years. Now, since that day, now that concerns me, because 24—that means 48 next year. If midlife was 24, next year I'm 48. I don't know what's going to happen next year, but I've discovered recently that it's not that I was wasting my life. It was just, I'm just a late bloomer. Okay, I mean, I got married late. I had kids late. I got a real job late. So, you know, just a late bloomer. But waste. You know, there's a phenomenon that's been going on recently is failure to launch. You know, those kids that graduate and they go nowhere. They stay in their parents' basement and they leech off of them. That's probably not a nice word, is it? And they don't use the talents and abilities they've been given. What area in your life are you wasting? Do you realize even that there's an area in your life that you're wasting? And I'm not saying that you are wasting an area of your life. My question is, are there areas of your life that you're wasting? And who sets the standard? See, because what I've discovered is I have these pictures, and I think in pictures sometimes, and I have these pictures in my head of what the standard is. And when reality happens and I compare that picture to reality, sometimes they don't measure up. So who sets the standard? I mean, that's a tough one. What's going to be the standard for wasting? My picture compared to reality. You know, those of you that are retired, is it all you dreamed it would be? Are you using your time like you thought you would? Those of you that have kids, are you using your time well? Spending it, are you present when your kids are present? How about this one? I might be stepping on, you know, over a little bit. If you get offended, I'm sorry. But does your money work for you, or do you work for your money? We may have areas in our life that we're wasting. Well, today we're going to look at a difficult parable. And it's difficult because scholars actually have struggled with it, so not just me, but and in fact, I had to go through and read some other people's sermons, and I thought, wow, they really did struggle with that. So you, at the end of the day, you may go, yeah, wow, Darren really struggled with that too. I'm not alone in it, all right? But as we look at this passage, there may be some things in our passage today that have some cultural elements that we miss because we have a different culture. But what we need to understand is when it comes to a parable, parables are used to illustrate a point. Now, sometimes there's some details in a parable that are conflicting or we don't quite understand it. They don't fit this perfect picture that we try to create, because the point of a parable is to illustrate a point. And so we want to be careful when we look at parables, because we want to make sure, are we looking at the point that is supposed to be illustrated? And so as we look at difficult parables, it's really important that we maybe slow down a little bit and dissect just a bit. Okay, so our parable today is a parable that Jesus told his disciples. It's found in Luke chapter 16. And he says this to his disciples. Jesus told his disciples, "There was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you cannot be manager any longer.' The manager said to himself, 'Well, what should I do now? My master is taking away my job.'" This is quite a confession here. "I'm not strong. I'm not strong enough to dig. I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do, so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their homes." So he called in each one of his master's debtors. And he asked the first, "How much do you owe my master?" 900 gallons of olive oil," he replied. The manager told him, "Take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 450. Now that's quite a write-off right away, isn't it? Let's go on. Then he asked the second, and "How much do you owe?" 1,000 bushels of wheat," he replied. And he told him, "Take your bill and make it 800. That guy didn't get as much of a discount. I don't understand that, but probably not a point we need to be concerned about. The master commended..." Now, this is where it gets really confusing, okay? The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. "For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light." Okay, let's stop there for a minute. We're going to read a little bit more in just a minute. But as we look at that chunk of Scripture, man, I go, oh, I really struggle with the master's response to the manager. Is anybody else? I mean, as we look at this, when we see the word master, I immediately go, oh, well, that's God. In the story, that's God. And so how does God respond to this manager who cuts a deal with the debtors? I mean, it would make a whole lot more sense if the master said, are you crazy? You're not going to get away with this. Did you think you could pull the wool over my eyes? But he doesn't. It's the response kind of sets us off a little bit, I think. It does me anyway. How can the master commend the manager? I mean, if you worked at a bank and you knew you were going to lose your job and you went to everybody that had a loan with that bank and you cut a deal with them, I don't think the manager of that bank would be like, oh man, or you know, the owner of the bank wouldn't be like, wow, that was really shrewd of you, right? I mean, Gloria, would you do that to an employee if they did that? Probably not, right? Yeah. So that response is strange. See, but let's not lose the points here, okay? Maybe we need to make sure that we understand a couple of things. Number one is, the manager, the steward, as other translations would say, the steward still got fired. Okay? He got commended for his decision, but he still lost his job. The master didn't come in and go, oh, well, you know, wow, you really surprised me. You can stay on as my manager. Absolutely not. He still got fired. The master didn't change his mind on his judgment. Master just was able to appreciate the actions that the manager took. The master was, okay? Look what he says in verse 9. It says this. Well, it won't be up on the screen yet, okay, because we're going to look at it later. But listen to it, okay? He says in verse 9, I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Now, that's another piece of this parable that we go, what? I mean, I do. Now, next week, Kevin's going to preach on a passage that actually will speak a little bit more about this thought. Now, we're going to talk later that this is a cultural understanding, and so we have to understand that. But we're not told that money gets you into heaven, okay? So let's not be confused. Let's address it right off the cuff here that this is a tough passage. This is a strange parable at first glance. But we want to make sure we address a couple things that it could be easy for us to misinterpret. And number one is you don't buy your way into eternal dwellings. Okay? You don't get there by paying somebody off. Jesus is the only way, period. Now, let's also recognize who he's talking to. He's not talking to the crowd. He's not talking to this large group of people that followed him around to see what he was going to say and get a miracle here or there. He was talking to these 12 men that had relationship with him. So as we look at it, we should be able to say, okay, he's talking to followers of Jesus. He's talking to the people that are already in that place where they've made the decision for Christ. So let's put our focus where it should be. There's one word in there that as you look at other translations, it seems to stick with us. Shrewd. Shrewd. He acted shrewdly. The shrewd manager is sometimes what it's called. So let's focus on that. Shrewd. Shrewdly. To be shrewd is to have a thought of the future and make decisions that are long-term. That's what he was being commended for. If you look at the story, what we see is the manager was wasting the master's resources. Now, a good manager recognizes when the master does well, he's going to do well. If you rip off your boss, you're only hurting yourself. So he was very short-sighted to begin with. But now he's acted shrewdly. Now he looks ahead and he goes, oh man, I'm losing my job. I've got to do something because I have no skills. So I'm going to make some friends. So when I'm down on my luck, when I don't have anything, I've got somebody I can go to. We aren't told that the master didn't care about loss. He was already losing a bunch by the manager anyway. He didn't reward the manager for stealing from him or for making these deals. He just, all he did was he acknowledged that he acted shrewdly. Okay? I may be going a little slow because I want you to see that this parable could be really easily misinterpreted. There's a point that he's making, and it's important that we get that point. We should not conclude that God commends those for cheating. Okay? Hopefully that's not a surprise to you, but that's not what Jesus is trying to say, and that's not how we should interpret it. So let's be clear. We will give an account for how we have managed his resources, how we have managed what God has given us. We will give an account. We're told that from the parable. That is a point in the parable that we can say, yes, that one's true. We understand it. It follows with everything else Jesus has said. So we need to maybe stop for a minute and say this. Maybe we need to determine what's ours and what's the master's. So we know we're going to give an account for the master's resources. That is part of the point he's making. So, what's yours and what's his? That's one of the questions we should ask. Well, here's a way to determine what's yours and what's his, okay? Here's what we'll define as what's yours. If you get to keep it when you die, it's yours. Okay? All right? So let's figure out, you just take a mental inventory. If you get to take it with you, it's yours. Okay? If it's left here, it's God's. If you have access to it, if you get to use it while you're alive, then guess what? You're a manager. You're a steward. And if you've got it and you don't get to keep it, then you will give an account for what you do with it. It's part of the point of this parable. We cannot escape this. So, let's look at the actions of the manager. The actions of the manager are important, not because he cheated, but because there was a solution to his problem. See, some time elapsed. Manager found out he's losing his job. I don't know why the master didn't just come in and say, you're done, get out. But he didn't. He said, you need to give an account for how you've handled my money. Go get the books. So the manager knew the end was near. And he had time to take care of it. Once the accounting was done, it was over. See, if we read the parable, the way Jesus tells the story, it's very important. Listen, you're going to lose your job. Give an account for how you use my resources. That's it. Once you've given an account, you're done with me. I'm done with you. What do you think the debtors knew in this process? I mean, they knew what they owed the manager, master. It was not a question. In fact, the manager made it pretty clear. Hey, how much do you owe? Now, I wonder, why would the manager not have the set of books and be able to say, listen, you owe 900 gallons of olive oil? He's including them in his plan. Do you think that they knew he was cutting them a deal? Absolutely. See, because he knew that when it was all said and done, he needed to cash in on those promises, on those favors. And so he had them in their own hand write what they owed. Man, this parable, there is a shortage of good people in here. It seems the master commends the guy for cheating him. The manager has been wasting resources. Now he totally rips him off. And the debtors just wrote their own bill and reduced what they owed. Once again, the manager did what was shrewd. Okay? As we read the parable, that should be the thing that stands out to you. Shrewd. That was what he was commended for. That was what was of value. Not what he did, but that he recognized the problem and he put in action a plan. All right. Verse 8, look what he says. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than the people of light. That's us. The people of light, that's us. We need to stop for a minute and we need to say, okay, he's telling us we're not always the wisest with the resources. We need to be more shrewd. That's a really weird word to say, by the way. I didn't realize until I verbalized it about 10 times today that it's strange. But this is the pivotal point in our passage today. The people of the world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than the children of the light, the people of the light. That's not a positive statement. So we need to take it and look at it in context. What has just happened in this passage? Luke 15 just gives us, Jesus has just given his disciples three different parables. He gave us the parable of the lost coin. The story goes that a guy lost some money in his house and he wanted it very badly, so he tore apart his house to find it. He left no stone unturned. Then he gives the parable of the lost sheep. Shepherd has 100 sheep, one goes missing. He leaves the 99 and he goes and he finds that one sheep. We're getting set, this context is being set up here. Jesus is preparing for what he's going to tell them. Then we have the parable of the prodigal son right after that. The son who got his inheritance, went and wasted his resources, and finally realized he made a mistake, and he came home. And he was received with open arms. That's what's leading into our passage today, our parable that Jesus tells us. You know what I hear in those passages? The value of people to God. The lost coin represents lost souls, lost people. The lost sheep represents people that don't know the Lord. The prodigal son coming to God. What is valuable? We're being told in context, people's salvation, people's lives. So the value is placed on people. Jesus was sending out his disciples. We find this in Matthew in the book of Matthew. Jesus was sending out his disciples, and as he's sending them out, he gives them some words of warning. And his words are this: for the people of this world. Oops, I missed it. What he says is, when you go out, be as shrewd as snakes and innocent as doves. There's that word again, shrewd. He's sending them out to be a witness for him, but he's telling them to be shrewd. Are we motivated? Are we as motivated to see people come to know the Lord as we are motivated to make money? That's a hard question, okay? Are we as motivated to see people come to know the Lord as we are motivated to make money? What if we were as creative in reaching out to people as we are creative to figure out how we're going to buy that next toy, or how we're going to make that extra dollar, or how we're going to whatever? I shop for bargains. I spend time saving a dollar. Am I that creative and that energetic for people who don't know the Lord? He expects us. He expects us to evaluate our situation and plan for the future. This is what we see in this, that we would be shrewd. We would stop and we would evaluate. Wait a minute. What I've got isn't going to get me where I need to go. I need to change my plan. So let's move on. Let's look what he says. He says this, verse 9, I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Whoa, that is strange. That's a strange statement. He goes on and says this: whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much, and whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. I like that he put that in there, because we can't interpret the actions of the manager as something that's good, because it was very dishonest. So if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? I think that's a big point there, true riches. What are true riches? And if you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you your property of your own? Give you property of your own. No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate one and love the other, or you will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. So I want to address this first statement that he makes in verse 9, because that's a little bit strange. Use worldly wealth to gain eternal dwellings. Well, we have to understand culturally there was a belief among Jews. And Barclay tells it this way: the rabbis had a saying, the rich help the poor in this world, but the poor help the rich in the world to come. It was a Jewish belief that charity given to poor people would stand to a man's credit in the world to come. A man's true wealth would consist not in what he kept, but in what he gave away. A man's true wealth was found not in what he kept, but what he gave away. And we already determined what's ours, right? We already determined what's God's. We act an awful lot like what's God's is ours. Do we waste it? And how does God feel about that? And is it a safe assumption to say, when we treat it as ours, what we're really doing is loving money more than God? Now, I'm fighting trying to make this about our finances, okay? It's important, but if I take this parable and talk about finances, then what I want to talk about in January is a repeat. So let's think about it other than just money, resource-wise, okay? The parable is focused on eternity. Storing up treasures. We're told, store up your treasures in heaven. Using what God has given you to share God with others. I got a video clip that I want to watch that I think kind of illustrates it a little bit. We pick up, it's from Schindler's List, and if you've seen it, then you know the scene, but if you've never seen it, the Allies have just taken over Germany, and the Nazis have fallen, and the war's over. Mr. Schindler is getting ready to leave the factory, and he's leaving this group of Jews that he has protected. And the way he protected them was is he made them his employees, is they were his work staff. And he saved over 1,000 Jews out of concentration camps. He bought them and protected them. And it's coming to the end of the war, and he looks at the crowd, and just, why don't you watch this video.
Hebrew from the Talmud, it says, whoever saves one life saves the world entire.
So what do you see when you look around you? I mean, God has given us His resources. Some He gives more, some He gives different. But how do you see them? it's a powerful thing. As I watched that, as he began, he looked at his car and he saw 10 people. Looked at this gold pen is one person. I'm not asking you, I'm not telling you that you sell everything. But God's given us resources for a reason. And we will give an account for how we use them. That much is very clear in his parable. And he's challenging us to be shrewd about it. He's challenging us to look ahead, evaluate the situation, and recognize what's coming. Everyone of us knows what's coming. So we're kind of like that manager who's just been told the job's going to be done. And you got a little bit of time before you give an account. What are you going to do with it? Are you going to be as shrewd as snakes and innocent as doves? He wasn't commended because he was dishonest. He was commended because he finally looked ahead. He saw the problem and he acted. He wasn't looking at the here and now anymore. He stopped wasting. God values honesty, trustworthiness. Jesus made that very clear. We can't serve two masters. Remember the context, three parables, the lost coin, the lost sheep, and the prodigal son, and verse 9. Use your worldly wealth for eternal dwellings. Eternal significance. Lay up your treasures in heaven. Evaluate our circumstances. Know that the Master asks us to give an account. And start immediately. The shrewd manager took action to fix the situation the moment he realized that he wasn't going to have much time. If we use our money, our talents, our time, our energy for eternity, we can cling to Jesus' statement when he says, "Whoever can be trusted with very little can be trusted with much." Will you stand with me, please? I wrestled an awful lot with what in the world is Jesus trying to say? So much so that now as I preach it, I'm being convicted about myself. But why don't we leave today with this thought? That if we can be trusted with little, we will be trusted with much.